Thank you very much. I'll use the old-fashioned pointer. So I would like to talk today to you about the dynamics and MRI-driven turbulence in a cylindrical annulus. And that work was a part of the NSF-sponsored Physics Frontier Center for Magnetic Self-Organization in laboratory in astrophysical plasmas, which was actually renewed recently, which is a very good news for us. So, the main motivation of this work, as I'm sure you heard already, for example, on Monday, the accretion processes which are ubiquitous to the universe. And I like this movie a lot that shows this supermassive black hole right in our neighborhood. Of course, we are very lucky that it's dormant and doesn't accrete much. But it has like 3 million solar masses and had to acquire it at some point. So I guess it did acquire it and have some sort of behavior as shown here with a tremendous this radio block extending to the hundreds of kiloparsecs. So the scales are tremendous for these processes. The main problem with the accretions, as I'm sure you already heard, is really stability of the Keplerian-like flows. When you have angular momentum which increases outward, like for example, square root of the r for Keplerian flows, the flows tend to be really stable, which was showed by the third baron Rayleigh. And one of the candidates, promising candidates for the sum of accretion flows is magnetorotational instability discovered by Velikov, Chandrasekhar, and then rediscovered by Balbus and Holley in the context of the accretion flow. So I don't want to go through these details of the mechanism of this instability. I'm sure you already heard it. But the main question we would like to address here is the saturation of magnetorotational instability in the asymptotically large, well, hopefully in high Reynolds number regime. Some aspects of this magnetorotational instability and its saturations can be studied in laboratory experiments using liquid metals, like liquid sodium and gallium, when you can find these them between the coaxial rotating cylinders. And these type of flows have basic ingredients that you can observe in the accretion, which is rotation, and you can have magnetic field there. Shear rotation and magnetic field. Ideally, one would like to have the quiet flow, which you have this solid body rotation piece and the shear, if you rotate your cylinders differentially. And there are a lot of experiments coming online or already been online. We concentrated on one which was conceived by Hantao G and Jeremy Goodman. Which they are also part of this CMSO center, which we are working with. The novelty of this experiment is that interesting idea of splitting the vertical boundary conditions into differentially rotating rings. So you can either couple it to the inner cylinder, to the outer cylinder, or run it in between. So you have more control of the basic flow that you expect to see between these cylinders. Why is that important? Well, as you all know, there's the presence of this Ekman circulation, which makes things horrendously difficult for experimentalists. For example, in this configuration, this is a poloidal slice, theta slice of the cylinders. That's inner cylinder, outer cylinder, and these both rings are coupled to the outer cylinder, which rotates slower than the inner one. These are the contours of azimuthal vorticity at Reynolds numbers of 6,000. And you can see that there are these two jets over the slowly rotating rings, which propel the fluid along the inner cylinder and then merge in these big radial jets, which with the increase of Reynolds number becomes unstable and breaks apart into this exosymmetric ring. This is exosymmetric simulation. Well, if you choose your speeds carefully, configuration which we refer to ring, and which was conceived by Hantao G and Jeremy Goodman, then you can see that this kind of jet is here now, now shrinks to that portion. And you also have opposing jets. So the consequences of that, that you don't have this big radial outward jet anymore. You have a very small one, and you have a vertical shear layer, this Stewardson layer. With these drastic changes to the flow, one would expect, of course, to see the changes to the, your basic profile. Here you can see the azimuthal velocity versus graph of azimuthal velocity versus radius, and you can see the solid body, the solid line is the Couette flow, and the Reynolds number varies from 620 to 6,000, and the once you have this configuration of leads where rings are coupled to the outer cylinder, slower rotating outer cylinder, you have a big deficit of angular momentum here. Huge modification from the Couette flow. But if you choose the configurations of rings with intermediate angular velocities for the ring, then you can have, you can trace the Couette flow more closely. And that configuration is better for if you want to address the basic questions of the angular momentum transport in the presence of the magnetic field. So what's the reason of this disruption of the Ekman circulation with the ring? We looked at that in more details, and it turns out to be the basic mechanism is similar to the one which was described by Ekman about 100 years ago. And we just recently published as well, through that year, in thematical issue of the Physical Scripta, where the balance of the rotation and the centripetal pressure gradient sets the direction of these Ekman layers. So in the Couette flow, that balance is exactly zero. You have rotation balanced by the pressure gradient. But once you have your boundaries, for example, slow rotating one, then that term is close to the wall, is lower than the pressure gradient. So you have the radially inward flow. And when you have your angular velocity locally higher than the bulk rotation, then you can have a contribution of the centrifugal rotation much higher than the pressure gradient. So by choosing your rotation speed, you control these colloidal stagnation points, and therefore extent of this Ekman flow. So one way to think of it. If you have this jet, vertical jet, and you couple all your angular velocities to the outer cylinder, you sort of make that jet going inward. If you couple all the angular velocities to the inner cylinder, then you make your jet go outward. And of course, in between, you can have all other configurations. So that that disruption of Ekman circulation also decreases the correlation between radial and azimuthal components, which is a big deal in the transport of angular momentum, which you would like to study once you put the magnetic field in for saturation or magnetorotational instability. So that illustrates the challenge that is presented to the experimentalist, which wants to address. And at that point, I would like to comment on the complementary role that simulations can have, and briefly compare experiments to simulations. So for liquid metal MRI experiments, you can see that you already have seen that they can reach very high Reynolds numbers, order of 10 to the 7, but are stuck to low magnetic Reynolds numbers. Well, of course, if Kerry can convince us otherwise with his facility, that would be very exciting news. You have plenty of things to worry about with the reality check, like vertical boundary conditions, which do confuse the issue with the secondary flows and instabilities. it's difficult to make measurements with a high spatial resolution, but you can do it with enormous temporal resolution. So experiments on the contrary, well, one thing to one has to worry always, they all require validation. So as Leo Kanaev refers to them, they are different scenarios that can be realized or not realized in practice. Of course, if they're done properly, of course, the simulations. The for MRI flows, they are usually stuck at moderate Reynolds numbers, but there is an additional benefit of it. We are not stuck with a liquid sodium diffusivity, and we can have a relatively high, say, moderate Reynolds number. We don't have a problem with any idealized boundary conditions. Spatially can measure anything. But the problem, of course, with the bigger size of computations, it can take asymptotically long time. It's practically impossible to run it for a long time. Really. Okay. So in particular, it's extremely hard to conduct high RM, high magnetic Reynolds number experiment. Well, but the one way to think about the experiments and the simulation is that we prefer FSP in space while experimentalists in time. So I don't have much of a time, so the standard energy equations, and we solved it with the energy version of the spectral element code developed by Paul Fischer at Argonne National Laboratory. Briefly, I would like to address the issue of the saturation of MRI, and it goes through the dissipation. Here is the current dissipation, for example, for the case where you don't have any issues with the boundaries. You just have applied axial small magnetic field, and the solution is strongly unstable to three-dimensional perturbation. In addition to the dissipation, you also have a modification of your profile. So you can see here this 6,000 phase and 60,000 phase that we got in 3D. And there is a little bit of a difference from the axisymmetric case, which is, interestingly enough, is a flat rotational profile. And briefly, that's how these flows look like. So if you look at the deviation of a symmetrical velocity from average component in the axisymmetric simulation, so it's inner cylinder, outer cylinder, periodic boundary conditions, applied axial small magnetic field, and then if you look at the, for example, three-dimensional case, so it does look quite different. So this is 60,000 case here, 60,000 case here, axisymmetric three-dimensional, the same quantities plotted. You wouldn't guess that it's these are the same flows, and they have quite different effective transport of angular momentum. So I guess I have to show a very good movie. It's practically the same thing. Very useless scientifically, but gives a very good impression. So we have to. Well, if you use it as a screensaver, sure, there will be some use. But other than that, I mean, it's just. In terms of angular momentum transfer, people have seen that you have a domination of the Maxwell stresses, so we do see the same thing. And actually, the reason for that is the decorrelation of the URD theta component, which you do have close to the boundaries. You have a right correlation for angular momentum transfer outward. But if you move away from the boundaries, you see that the velocity becomes decorrelated, but magnetic field still stays correlated. So the RB theta is negative, gives you the positive angular momentum transport, and we think we have a very good explanation for that, at least an attempt. So you can have this intrinsic asymmetry between the direction of winding up spirals and unwinding. So if you start with this configuration, you have a right angular momentum transport, but if you have one, that's the opposite direction, but this configuration will become this one very quickly, or let's say in the finite time. Well, in terms of spectral fluctuations, this is velocity, axial radial azimuthal, and you can see that it, by magnitude it's like 50 times smaller than order one velocity scale. So your turbulent magnetic Reynolds number is a few hundred. And of course, the main point, if you switch off the axial magnetic field on the boundary for this high magnetic Reynolds number, 30,000, then you can see your mean magnetic field here decays in time, while your fluctuations of the velocity and magnetic field stays in time. If you do the same trick for small Reynolds number, they do decay, both of them. So at high Reynolds numbers, it probably becomes a dynamo. And with the turbulent magnetic Reynolds number order of a few hundred, which is typical of a small scale dynamo system, you don't have any field here, as you can see. So MNRI driven turbulence becomes self-sustained at high enough magnetic Reynolds numbers, and it regenerates the magnetic field, which is necessary for its own existence. If you wouldn't have a field, as we've seen here, for example, it will come back to the quiet flow you have started with initially. And most likely, it's independent of these initial conditions that brought you the turbulence in the first place.
I don't understand. The
case
with R equals
30,000
dynamo.
Right.
So what's the next line?
The line. Yes. Yes, a small scale dynamo, because your mean field practically decay to zero. Right, because fluctuations were 50 times smaller, so 30,000 by 50, a few hundred. Sorry for that, I'm rushing too much. Again, the pleasant picture. And this scenario of MRI-driven turbulence provides very, very attractive rationale for enhanced angular momentum transfer. The reason is that most likely with high magnetic Reynolds number, it becomes a dynamo and therefore regenerates the field necessary for the flow existence in the first place. So you don't have to worry about the external field and where it comes from. The angular momentum transport is mediated by Maxwell stresses due to this negative correlation of radial energy neutral magnetic field, and most likely it's just kinematic effect of this winding up spiral. We have seen that the MRI saturates this highly three-dimensional state of this MRI-driven turbulence through the dissipation and modification of the background velocity top of solid body rotation. Well, an interesting case of axisymmetry, we have a flat rotation profile. And actually, that was the reason why we got this time to compute this flow. We thought we found our dark matter, but it didn't work in 3D, so it did go to solid body rotation. And the future work we're thinking about to check the smaller magnetic Prandtl number, of course, there is Faust and stuff we'll talk about, all these issues of the smaller magnetic Prandtl number, and it has more relevance to the liquid sodium dynamics experiment. Thank you.
So I think I'll use my chair's prerogative to ask a question about the angular velocity profiles with the split rings were improved for what appeared to be aspect ratio 4, so a very short cylinder. Could one get similar improvements just by making the cylinder longer, but without split rings?
Yeah, you would expect that your Ekman circulation will drop for long cylinders.
Because I guess that's something that would be easier to check through simulations than experiments, since it's difficult with experiments on variable.
Yeah, that's but one would expect that you have to go very high.
Yeah, so 20 to 30 has been traditional in Taylor
right,
wet
right,
low.
Right.
How do you numerically deal with the discontinuity of the split rings?
Very good question.
And when you do, does it actually simulate the microphysics of the physical split rings?
The benefit of this code, of course, is a spectral element code, so you can have semi-local behavior within the element. Within the boundaries of the elements, you match only velocity, continuity in the velocity. So the traditional way of being just left code figure it out. But Paul doesn't like that, and he said, well, just set the highest term polynomial that you can resolve, and then worry about the polynomial order. And we did a series of tests determining how small your gap should be of this transition with a parabolic step. And it didn't have much difference. But for comparison with experiment, it actually does have some implications. So we can discuss this issue.
I have two questions, one in physics and one in astrophysics. So let me start by the physics. Isn't it true that Taylor Coet is naturally a dynamo? Why do you need MR if I mean, even if you hadn't put any magnetic field at the beginning, you would have seen a dynamo, no? I am mistaken?
You start with a Coet flow, just a laminar Coet flow. It's only the axisymmetric flow of the azimuthal flow and no poloidal flow at all.
Yes, but this flow is a dynamo, isn't it?
No? Not that I know.
Pascal Chaussat didn't find dynamo in Taylor Coet flow?
It's a stable regime which you don't have any other component, just only azimuthal one.
Okay. And so my astrophysical question was that you found that the MRE saturate by killing the thing that produce it, that is the gradient of velocity.
But it seems
that in astrophysics, people are very keen on saying that, disks are Keplerian. So does it mean that the observation shows that the disks are not turbulent? If not, we would show flattened velocity profile? Or how does it work in astrophysics since...
It's a good question that the astrophysical flows are different because you have a gravity, and that maintains your basic flow profile, and no one expects that it will change due to the presence of magnetorotational instability. Yeah, in that sense, these flows are intrinsically different. But we've been looking at the local properties of turbulence and how much it can contribute to angular momentum transfer. In that respect, you won't expect that your basic profile will have any difference compared to astrophysical flows.
Okay, one last short question, please.
Have you compared the properties of your turbulence with local simulations based on shearing boxes?
Can you tell me where to pick the box here? It's a bit difficult to. We've been looking at this issue, whether we can actually address that. But so far, we didn't come up with a good method of choosing what box to take in this case. Plus, there has been certain difficulties with this local approximation, which turns out to be not that local. And there is work published by Gianluigi Bodo, Fausto, and others who look at how these shearing boxes behave with the aspect ratio. Until these issues are resolved, we don't want to spend too much time looking at this sea of data and try to compare the shearing box simulations. But I agree, it's a good point that one would like to see how much difference there is. And you don't want to run this simulation on your daily basis, that's for sure. So you would like to have something simpler to work with.
So with that, let's thank Alexander again. So on our next